the edge of the Mediterranean, one of the most glamorous playgrounds of the world, the harbor loaded with expensive and exquisite toys, and the famous Monte Carlo Casino, well, the bank is very solvent these days, thank you. The palace is sitting above the city, and the royalty is home for this weekend, and thousands have come to watch motor racing. This was the start of the 1978 race, and off the start, James Hunt hit the rail, but the other 19 cars passed swiftly and safely up the hill and past the casino, screaming along the streets of Monte Carlo, past sidewalk cafes, and on toward a magic moment for a Frenchman who had never before won a Grand Prix. Patrick Depailler, driving brilliantly with luck, was literally all alone in the late minutes of the race, and you could hear the cheering all the way to Saint-Tropez as he held a huge lead over Austrian Niki Lauda. That much of a lead for Patrick Depailler. And when a Frenchman wins here in Monaco, it is more fun than ever. On he sped to the checkered flag and victory. The Grand Prix of Monaco today on ABC's Wide World of Sports.
This is one of those places you can hardly believe on Grand Prix weekend. Add what you see here to the fact that Monegas pay no taxes, there are no gas lines, and you really have something. It's truly a pretty place. This year, no massive marine yachts in the quay, though, flying the flag of Nearchos and Onassis. But just outside the harbor entrance, there's the flagship of the U.S. 6th Fleet, the light cruiser USS Albany. The Vice Admiral James Watkins commanding. And for the men aboard the Albany, well, they've had themselves quite a weekend here in Monte Carlo. Hello again, everybody. I'm Keith Jackson. We're happy to be here for the 50th anniversary of the Grand Prix of Monaco. This is going to be quite a day for automobile racing here on ABC. Tonight at 9 Eastern Time, we'll bring you same-day coverage of the Indianapolis 500. It was back in 1952, the name Ferrari first went on a Winners' Cup here at the Grand Prix of Monaco. And the name Ferrari is certainly very obvious in 1979 because they sit 1-2 on the starting grid. Sam Posey is with us as our expert commentator. Sam's turned many a fancy corner in his time and got a lot more in his future. But Sam, let's talk a moment about the Ferraris, about the two drivers, Jody Scheckter and Gilles Villeneuve and their prancing horses.
Well, Keith, these guys have not only qualified on the front row of the grid here, but they're very well placed in the world championship as well. Jody is tied for the lead with the championship with Jacques Lafitte, a Frenchman driving a French car. And his teammate, Gilles Villeneuve, is tied for third with another Frenchman. So they're placed very well. By the way, there's been a change in the way the World Championship is scored this year. Instead of adding up all the points as they used to, the season's going to be split into two halves. 7 races in the first half, 8 races in the second. You're only going to be able to count half of your points from each half. Right. The result is that it encourages you to go for the lead, you know? And the other benefit is that hopefully the races at the end of the year, the Canadian and the American races, will be strongly supported.
It may also help Mario Andretti, who became the second American to win the World Driving Championship last year. Mario has been struggling here in the first half of the season, but with the cancellation of the Swedish Grand Prix now, he'll have a chance, 5 weeks really, to work on his car and his team. And he starts today way back number 13 position. One of the drivers trying to unseat Mario Andretti starts in the number 5 position on the grid. Jacques Lafitte driving Léger number 11. He won the first 2 Grand Prix of the year, Argentina and Brazil, and he shares the lead, as we noted, in driver's points with 24. Starting in the number 4 position, it'll be Austrian Niki Lauda in a Brabham. That's number 5. In 4 starts here at Monaco, Lauda has won twice and finished second twice, and he's been rather tigerish in practice during the course of this week. Niki Lauda, who is definitely a man to watch as he scuffles with the Ligiers and the Ferraris coming off the starting grid. Moving on to the number 3 starting position, it is Frenchman Patrick Depailler, who came from the 3rd row to win this race last year, his first Grand Prix win ever, but in April of this year, he got his 2nd Grand Prix victory in Spain, and he's driving a Ligier. And though there are some who suggest that perhaps he may not have the pace for this, we'll see, because he has been a dogged performer, and he has tasted victory, and he liked it very much. Starting 2nd, as noted, Gilles Villeneuve, number 12, French-Canadian, winner at South Africa and at Long Beach this year. And he also is driving one of those prancing horses. And the pole sitter, Jody Scheckter, right there in Ferrari number 11, winner here in 1977, winner of the Belgian Grand Prix. Earlier this month, he is tied with Lafitte for the driver's point lead. Now, Gilles Villeneuve earlier today in practice had an unsettling moment as an oil line pulled loose on his Ferrari after he struck a curb. It caused some spillage on the course, a lot of smoke. It took a time for him to really see it and realize that he was blowing oil out the back. He was very fortunate at the speed he was traveling on the course that oil didn't get on the tire and cause some wreckage. But they changed the engines for insurance. And that little untoward moment has done nothing to unsettle the confidence in the Ferrari pits for Villeneuve. The tires have been heated up. The roar builds and builds, and they're gone. And it's Scheckter coming off the pole and going for the lead. But you had a move by Niki Lauda in car number 5. It appeared that Lauda made a daring, bold move to grab second place away from Villeneuve. So far, they're clean as they work their way up the hill for the first time. They go screaming past the casino right there. And it's still clean. Everybody's stringing out just a little bit.
You wonder if the troubles that Gilles Villeneuve had just at the end of the warm-up this morning might have hurt his confidence. He did make a bad start. And Lauda, as you said, has capitalized on his brilliance.
Down around the hairpin now. It's not a moment to get careless. A couple of them running alongside of each other, and that is a precarious posture. Now they'll come back into the speed area where they can shift through the gears, and they will pick up tremendous speed as they come past Mirabeau, heading into the tunnel where they disappear from the sunlight and then come flashing down the hill. This is the fastest portion of the racetrack where the speeds, as Jackie Stewart noted, come up to about 140 miles an hour, working their way past the swimming pool for the first time. This is the opening lap of the 1979 Grand Prix of Monaco, and Jody Scheckter in the Ferrari has jumped out to a big lead with Niki Lauda running in second place. His teammate, the man sitting in the number 2 position off the starting grid, was overtaken off the start by Lauda, and Villeneuve is hanging on. But it's right now Lauda, the prime pursuer of the leader, Jody Scheckter, and lap 1 has been completed. So as they pass the start-finish line, it is Jody Scheckter, the pole sitter, who broke out in front, being trailed by Niki Lauda. Then comes Gilles Villeneuve. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Jody Scheckter is the leader. You're looking at the fight there coming into the chicane for second place, with running second Niki Lauda and running third Gilles Villeneuve. And number 25, the blue car, is Patrick Depailler, chasing them. Niki Lauda.
Keith, an interesting thing here is that, of course, Gilles was almost as fast as Jody in qualifying. Just a tenth of a second separated them. Now, of course, he's dropping way back, almost half a second a lap at this rate. We have the interesting situation where this track is very, very hard to pass on. And already, I think Lauda may be holding up Gilles Villeneuve, and possibly, here we go for the pass here.
Villeneuve is gone for the pass, and he got him. Villeneuve on the home straight, the start-finish straight, was able to get past Lauda, and Lauda literally had lost contact with the leader, Jody Scheckter. So now the Ferraris are running 1-2 on the racetrack as they started. Lauda is not at this moment able to maintain the pace. You can see that Villeneuve is now beginning to pull away from Lauda. So that probably means that Depailler and others will be closing on Lauda and making the challenge if the opportunity presents itself. Overtaking one here is a very difficult thing, making the pass. It's very hard to find. In slow motion, Sam, a look at the pass by Villeneuve.
Keith, this is absolutely amazing. I wasn't ready for it at all. This is known as such a hard track to pass on. That measure of superiority that you see Villeneuve showing there in his Ferrari is unbelievable. It did come at a price, though. Did you notice him bounce hard over the curb? That's the same curb that caused his oil line to break earlier on. So that was a difficult maneuver. Lauda there, now back into third place, Keith.
And now a question as to whether or not he can hold off the charging Patrick Depailler, who had success for the first time last year in Grand Prix competition, winning here, and he is closed right down on Lauda. So that's something I think we can anticipate as the race wears on.
Maybe
number 5.
Maybe, Lauda. I don't know, though. This is an interesting situation because Lauda has the 12-cylinder engine, whereas the two Ligiers that are following have only 8-cylinder engine. It may be hard for them to duplicate the kind of move that Villeneuve made. In other words, they may be able to stay with Lauda and press him, but to actually get by in those Ligiers with their smaller engine, it could be tough.
But I think the important story right for the moment is up in front, where the two flat 12 Ferraris are screaming away, running off into a substantial lead. The leader is Jody Scheckter. He started on the pole, and he's been sitting there from the beginning. They laid down more brake horsepower than any other engine out on the racetrack. Niki Lauda has not had an easy 1979 at all, and Jackie Stewart, before he left for Indianapolis, spent a little time talking with the great Austrian driver about some of the trouble.
Now, you came out of a world championship winning team, a tremendous comeback after your accident. Now you seem to be struggling. What way are you going to attack this?
Well, I take it always as the same way, try to do my best and try to push the team to get everything sorted out. But, you know, we have a lot of political problems as well, like the Alfa making the Alfa people making their own car and having a different engine for our car. So it's all together, it's not easy.
This is the fact that Alfa Romeo supply the engine to Brabham, but now that they have a Formula One car of their own, they obviously want to have a better engine.
Correct, and when they will run the car the next couple of races with the same engine as we use, sure, the first will be their engine, the second will be their engine, the third will be ours, which is logical and normal. But, you know, these are all things, if you put them all together, you can't win.
Some pre-race comments from Niki Lauda. And I'll tell you one thing, Sam, that politics and lack of horsepower don't mix on this racetrack.
That's for sure. You know, Keith, Lauda wrote a book in which he pointed out that the best way to overtake a car at Monte Carlo is to dog him lap after lap and pressure him into a mistake. Fascinating to see Lauda now on the receiving end of that strategy.
Leaders are Ferraris, Jody Scheckter and Gilles Villeneuve running 1-2. Gilles Villeneuve, the young French Canadian, running in second place behind his teammate Jody Scheckter. The Ferraris are 1-2 right now. Villeneuve, an interesting young man. He actually started racing in a cold weather sport. Earlier this week, Jackie Stewart spent some time talking with him.
Like so many Grand Prix drivers nowadays, they come from every corner of the world. And what a contrast it must be to be sitting here in a boat in the port of Monaco, looking out towards the Mediterranean, for a man who really started his racing career in snowmobiles in Canada. Gilles, it is a big change.
Yeah, it sure is a big change. From snowmobiling in 69-70 to Formula One racing here in Monaco, it's a big way.
What's the difference between driving snowmobiles and championship events and Grand Prix cars?
Well, definitely in snowmobile, we don't have that nice weather. That's a big difference. But the snowmobile are very, I think they've been very good to me because they are very quick in their reaction, you know, from understeer to oversteer, and they're quite sophisticated. So the 4 or 5 seasons I've done in snowmobiling has been like if I have done 1 or 2 seasons more in car racing.
Now, you're to say the least a spectacular driver. You've had your share of accidents and problems. You seem to be cooling a little bit, but still you're to say the least spectacular.
Well, I guess everybody who started in Formula One is pretty much spectacular all the time. I suppose you were very much spectacular when you started. And with experience, you're a bit smoother and everything. And also it depends on style also, I guess.
Okay, let's go and see how fast this one can go. Let's go.
Here, Jody Scheckter in front, Villeneuve running in second place, and Sam, it must be discouraging to everybody else in the field to have these two big muscle cars get that far out in front.
Well, I think that the rest of the field, Keith, is so preoccupied trying to get by Lauda that they've got their own problem. The interesting thing is what goes through the mind of a pair of drivers like this who are so dominating the race. And I'll tell you, part of the answer, obviously, is to think exclusively about conserving the car. Already, both these guys are not hitting the curbs. You watch, Villeneuve earlier was hitting those curbs there, and all through qualifying, he's now giving everything a wide berth. Jody Scheckter, as he comes by us, is shifting slowly. I can actually hear the pause between the gears. In other words, these guys are cooling it, as amazing as that may seem, in view of their utter domination of this event.
Continuing our same-day coverage of the Monaco Grand Prix via satellite, Keith Jackson, Sam Posey, and they're running swiftly through the streets of Monte Carlo, with the two Ferraris way out in front, dominating the race so far, Jody Scheckter and Gilles Villeneuve. As for the Ligiers, they're in trouble. Jacques Lafitte had rear tire problem had to fit. Patrick Depailler has dropped well off the face. And right now, it is Niki Lauda running in third place with Didier Pironi and Alan Jones fourth and fifth. But the Ferraris have been terribly impressive. And here's the battle right here, Sam, for third place, and it's a good one.
It certainly is, Keith. The minute the Ligiers went out, these other two cars stepped right up to take up the challenge. The Terrell, you see him moving out there. Pironi.
Oh, wait a minute. Crash over at the Mirabeau turn. It's Pironi over the top. Over the top of Lauda. Pironi is into the wall, coming out of the cockpit. Appears to be all right. Lauda was able to keep his car under control and roll away, and Alan Jones dodged all of the debris and escaped from it miraculously.
And moved up into third. Keith, Alan Jones is now third as a result of this accident. He certainly seems all right. There's Pironi there. We did see Lauda continuing slowly on down the track. I can't believe that his car could be race-worthy.
Another look at it in slow motion as the number five red car, Lauda, comes down toward the Mirabeau turn. And now it appears...
Well, it's like they're fanning out for almost a triple pass. There's Pironi on the extreme left of your screen. Jones tucks in behind. Here's the key moment right here. Unbelievable. It looks as if Pironi should have braked to get out of Lauda's way there.
It appeared that Lauda did have the line.
Yeah, it did. That's a very, very hard one to call, Keith, especially when you're seeing it from the sidelines. There's Pironi. He's lucky, I think, to have escaped that. He hit the guardrail quite a whack.
Really crunched into it. And now Mario Andretti has pitted. Andretti was running in 11th place, having moved up two spots. Now here is Sterling Moss with Lauda.
What happened? Pironi just forgot to brake, I think, and just ran over me from the back.
Well, it's at the mirror back.
Right. How much were the two cars worrying you? Because they give you a tremendous pressure.
Well, I was just sitting there doing my normal job, and then he suddenly braked too late and ran away from the back and hit the car the last.
But you reckon he couldn't stop for you as quickly as you stopped?
I braked at a normal point where you have to brake, and he didn't.
And the car, that you can't continue.
It's very clever what he did.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Pretty noisy down there. Sterling hung in there. Another look at it now as you see Lauda coming down towards the turn, and it appears that he has the line, and with Jones making that move out, bang, it happened.
Yeah, look, they're waving the passing flag here. That might have encouraged Pironi to think that Lauda was going to give him the room. That's a very hard call to make, as I said, from the sideline. Lauda's always very objective about these things, but as he was coming in, I noticed the car did fade slightly to the right, and maybe in the instant, Pironi thought, after all this frustration, this is my chance.
Well, in the meantime, the leaders continue to roar away. Jody Scheckter and Gilles Villeneuve with Alan Jones now running in a charging number three spot. From the very beginning of our coverage of this Grand Prix of Monaco, we suggested the people that had to be handled would be the two Ferraris, and nobody is handling them right now. They are flat out flying. Jody Scheckter, who started on the pole, still holds the lead. Gilles Villeneuve, who was in second place on the starting grid, running second. That white car closing some there is Alan Jones driving hard. Mario Andretti is out. Sterling Moss, a three-time winner at Monaco, now to talk to him.
What happened, Mario?
The suspension arm broke.
But did you have it? Did you have an incident before? Did you touch anything or did it break?
I just broke. It's under stress. It's a rocker where the spring, it takes up all the spring loading, and it's titanium and obviously
not strong enough. How were you under that pressure? Was it worrying you or were you pacing yourself?
I had a real problem because the fire bottle by my feet all came loose and it was bouncing around. I was afraid it would go into my pedals. The bottle weighs about 15 pounds and it was just knocking me here. I was trying to fight that under braking. So.
Could you have continued if it was...
I was going to continue, but I wouldn't have had any legs at the end.
Yeah. Well, bad luck. Thanks very much.
All right, Sterling, thank you. That white car, number 27, being driven by Alan Jones, and he is closing steadily on the leading Ferrari. Jones started ninth on the grid. He is now third because of the accidents we've had, and once free of the traffic, this Australian is really bearing down.
Keith, his car is a very, very short wheelbase car, which is incredibly good at the very tight turns that this track has so many of. The faster turns, the car is not so stable there. But when it comes to whipping through these hairpins, Alan Jones in this exceptional Williams car is absolutely in control. We're coming into a couple of those very tight ones now, and I think we'll see him gain noticeably on the Ferrari. Here, there's nothing tighter than this. He goes in a little bit shallower than the other guys and does pick up just a little bit. Alan Jones has been a factor to reckon with in the last two races, and this could be his day. He's really putting the pressure on the Ferrari.
Of course, it could be, too, that the Ferraris, as we indicated earlier, had a tendency to go a little bit conservative with their big cushion, and why wouldn't they? And then suddenly, after all of the melee behind them, they look in the rearview mirror, and here comes this guy driving a white car like a thunderbolt.
Well, Keith, sometimes the hard thing, after you backed your pace down a little bit and you were driving cautiously, and these two Ferrari guys were doing that, sometimes it's hard to find the rhythm of the real hard pace again. Hard to go back to really putting it to the racing car. But these two Ferrari guys know what they're doing. Look at how close Jones is, especially as they come through that tight stuff. He is right there with that little car.
Well, they say it's a handling course, as you indicated, and perhaps he does have an edge in there. We're told that Hans Stuck in car number 9 has slid into the barrier. He's out. 7 cars gone from the race so far. But we, for a long time, thought we were just going to have a procession of Ferraris, and now suddenly, here's the big, strong Aussie giving him a run.
Jones is just known to be a tiger, and he has absolutely got the bit between his teeth on this thing. We're coming again to the part, the tight part, where he seems to pick up. The trouble is, when he goes past the long straight section near the pit, he drops way back. I mean, the difference in horsepower between Jones and the Ferrari is noticeable there. But now, from here on, through these very tight pits, he comes up and up. How he will put a pass on, I don't know. He can get close to them, and it'll be very interesting what he does to get by.
But I've always considered this a muscle course, as well as a handling course, obviously. But when you get down to the real definition, it probably would be the brake horsepower that would determine it. The running order for the front three remains the same. Jody Scheckter, Ferrari 11, Jules Villeneuve, Ferrari 12, and Alan Jones in the white Williams car, number 27, and through the handling area of the course, a point Sam Posey made previously, the white car seems to perform the best, but on the straight, he just kind of waves to him.
Keith, it's a fascinating comparison of two different types of car. I mean, look at how close he is right there. That's at the tightest point on the track. He's able to close up. He's completely in touch. Now they come through this, which is the last turn on the track, and they accelerate up the pit straight. At that point, the Ferraris leave Jones behind. Look at that. I mean, they pull out about 10 car lengths right there. And from there to the top of the hill, Jones isn't even in contention. Then, starting at the casino turns, which are coming up now, he starts to work his way closer and closer. And this goes on lap after lap. And it's a fascinating comparison of two entirely different types of engines and what results they wind up with on a racetrack. Here he comes.
At this point, too, Sam, I think that Alan Jones, to have success, is going to have won some racing luck. That is, one or perhaps even both of the Ferraris gets involved in an untoward moment or expires because of mechanical troubles, or else you have to become exceptionally daring.
Yeah, Keith, and unfortunately, it's Jones who has so often been beset by bad racing luck in the past. One reason he's come up so far through the pack, he started ninth, by the way, is that he had trouble in qualifying when his suspension broke, and he wasn't able to get with it. He led the last race, the one held just before this. He broke down there. He was running brilliantly third at Long Beach. He had trouble there. So Jones, who at 33, sort of journeyman driver from Australia, now obviously the biggest season underway, has yet really to have the luck to put it together and wind up in winner's circle.
Alan has one Grand Prix victory. That was the Austrian Grand Prix in 1977. He has won in 58. This is his 59th Grand Prix race. So perhaps luck might be about to swing his way, but he's going to have some to run down those two fine Ferraris who just simply blow him away on the longer straightaway portion of this 2-plus-mile course in the streets of Monte Carlo. Suggesting there was something wrong with the front of the car of Alan Jones. Obviously there is. He's in the pits. The Ferraris have flown away, and Alan Jones, who had made such a noble bid, running right up the tailpipe of the 2-liter Ferraris, has literally expired sitting in fifth row and lost all hopes and chances of claiming victory.
for making a run, at least, at this Monaco Grand Prix. Heartbreaking moment. Well, Sam, tonight at 9 Eastern Time, over most of these ABC stations, another great thrill in auto sports, the Indy 500.
Keith, I can't imagine two events of greater contrast than this Monaco GP and the Indianapolis 500. Here we are, absolutely driving between the walls of houses compared to the complete openness of the 500. Of course, they're both the best of their kind.
You'll see it tonight at 9 Eastern Time, right here, over most of these ABC stations. Now here's Sterling with Alan Jones.
Alan, what happened? Bad luck. What happened?
Well, Sterling, I came out of the chicane and I was going into the left-hand corner after the chicane, and the front, as I went to turn in, it didn't turn in. It just went straight ahead and touched the Armco with the right-hand front wheel. I don't know whether my throttle stuck momentarily. I hit a bit of oil. Just one of those things. And it didn't do what I asked it to do.
Tremendous race. Tell me, could you stay with the Ferraris, you reckon?
Oh, I could have stayed with them easily. It was a matter of getting past them I was worried about.
Yeah, but when were you going to try to pass them then?
Well, I was hoping that their tyres were going off. I think they were a little bit, and I was going to have a serious attack a bit later on.
Number 12, with Jules Villeneuve, has disappeared from the racetrack. There he is, rolling down pit road, apparently out of the race in a crippled car. What a startling development late in the race.
Keith, when I first saw him come in, I thought maybe he was in tire trouble, the way Alan Jones suggested he might be, but obviously it's something more serious. Makes you wonder what the future of Jody Scheckter, still here on the track, might be.
Those two cars made just as much alike, I guess, as possible. So now it's up to Jody Scheckter to keep the Ferrari colors flying. He won the last race at Belgium. We don't know, though, is whether or not Scheckter's cruising a little bit here, resting.
Jody referred to when he talked about the Ferrari factory and their attention to detail, a visible symbol of that is that they designed, look at Regazzoni, he is closing in. What I was going to say is that Ferrari designed a special wing for this car just for this race and its tight turn. Working so far, but the progress Regazzoni's making, it's amazing.
Regazzoni closing in, but right here, Sterling Moss talks with Gilles Villeneuve.
Well, Gilles, what happened?
I don't know exactly. I think it's either a driver shaft or the differential that broke.
Well, now tell me, were you under team orders? Did you have to sit there, or could you have gone faster if you could?
No, we always had an agreement between us that we don't fight if we don't have to.
Can you believe that? Somebody's waving a move-over flag at the leader of the race? Well, he was, but obviously, Jody Scheckter ignored it. What a ridiculous thing to do. Carlos Reutemann is running in third place, but he has long since lost contact with these two. Just the job rolled away to the finish line. If Scheckter hangs on, it'll be his eighth career Grand Prix win, his second victory at Monaco. It'll give him a clear lead in the World Championship driver's point standings. He'll be left with a total of 30. They go through the chicane, hurtling along past the key. Now they must work through the turns at the swimming pool. Scheckter makes the slightest mistake here, and Regazzoni blows right by him. The end is in sight. There is one turn. Here is the left-hander. Now they must go past the ratchet. Chip themselves through the gears another time. Then it'll be up to Regazzoni in his final guess, his very last effort right here, and he's a straight horsepower by the Ferrari. It's going to be a Scheckter victory.